On a more positive note, we were just saying to the band, "Oh, you know, it's a shame you couldn't got here earlier." I says, "Oh, I got plenty of time to make everybody feel really miserable." I got this afternoon, tonight, tomorrow morning. That's all I need. I know this stuff is tough stuff, you know, and I know you get mad at you, and I know somebody's going to be really pissed at me. And I was like, oh, because I'm a grip focus, you know. Son of a bitch. I mean, people get furious and just incensed and enraged. I would say these things. Yeah? I don't blame you. It's okay. Don't worry about it. I mean, I know that. I come here to upset you. I heard an Al-Anon speaker say one time, her sponsor told her that now that she was in recovery, her responsibility was to disturb the comfortable and comfort the disturbed. I believe that. I'm here to disturb the comfortable. So if you're uncomfortable, that's okay. I'm not upset. And if you're really mad at me, that's okay. I know, it's a bitch. It's a bitch. Because I'm making stuff happen in here, and you don't want to let it happen. And you don't want to cry about it or laugh about it or be mad about it. You don't want to look at it because you know it hurts. There's an intuition in you that says, this hurts bad. And it's right. It hurts bad. It's a bitch. Just a bitch. You can cry and sob and yell and scream until you lose your voice and your throat's hoarse and you can punch out of bed until your knuckles bleed and you could get a lot of stuff up. But the result is freedom from the past. An example of the 12 steps used as to how I understand they're supposed to be used. See, they old guys didn't miss a trick. They didn't miss a trick. And when it says, you know, exact nature of our wrongs, the exact nature, man, look up the words, exact the nature. Because every goddamn inventory I've ever heard stops short. And I really got in touch with this a while ago. I was talking to a guy on the phone. He was taking an inventory and he was saying, he was in ACA, he was taking an inventory and saying, well, you know, yeah, he says, I'm starting to remember some of the childhood stuff, you know. He said, particularly, he said, I remember this kid down the street from me, man. Every Christmas, man, he always got 10 times as many toys as I did, and they were always better toys. And I really resented him. I said, yeah? And? He says, nothing. I resented him. Says, put down, you know, your resentments. I resented him. I said, and? He says, and what? I said, and? I said, if you cut it off, you resent him because he got more toys and more expensive toys, you really look like an asshole. A selfish, sniveling kid. I said, how about adding to that, that you resented him because the toys represented love to you? And those toys represented the love you weren't getting in the house you lived in, and you didn't hate him for the goddamn toys, you hated him for what the toys represent. The toys represent love. Why don't you look at that? Of course, then he started to sob on the other end of the phone, and now we know why he didn't want to look at that, you know. Because that's the bitch. Better look like a jerk. Ah, he got better toys, I hated the punk. I'm saying I didn't get much because nobody cared enough to take time to shop. So yeah, you're right, this is real tough stuff, but God, I gotta tell you, the freedom that comes from it is, you know, I mean, I'm having the best time. I have a lot of fun today. You know, I never knew how to have fun, because you can't look good and have fun. You gotta be willing to look silly to have fun. You know, I mean, you can't have real fun and look cool. The two are not synonymous. They don't go together. And I just moved recently to a new area. I've never been river rafting in my life, you know. And the minute I got to Santa Fe, the kid says, I want to ride a raft down the river. Right? And our bones are old, man. You know, I don't know. You know, we're not in good shape. We haven't worked out in 6 weeks, you know. And then I heard all the bullshit. And I heard my own speeches, which were my parents' speeches, which is why we never went anywhere and never did anything. So I said to the kid, we'll go tomorrow. You know, I drove into town, went to the river rafting place and said, sign me up, you know, we're off. Went and had a wild time, man, best time ever. I'm going to go up to Colorado next week, doing a bigger river. It's fun, it's a great rush. You know, it's a tremendous, and I, you know, got wet and there was water fights and looked stupid and I came back, everything was soaked and I, you know, it was just, and the kid was just
thrill. Thrill. He didn't care it was 7 o'clock at night, there was a thunderstorm, it was pouring rain, we're dripping wet when we're walking back to our car from the river. He didn't care. Kids don't care. And you want to learn about the danger of all these feelings? Go to the playground and watch the children. And you'll learn probably the most critical thing that you need to know if you're going to start experiencing your feelings, which is they're fleeting. They're fleeting. Watch a kid on the playground. Be sitting in the corner of the sandbox. Absolute disaster. Screaming, crying, miserable, just destroyed. And then he'll cough. Look over here at what this kid's playing with. And he's done. It's over. Yeah, all we try and do is stuff it. Hold it down. That's what we were taught. That's what was done to us. Hold it down. You know? I'm on an airplane. I still think this way. You know, I got off the plane the other day and I thought, got a kid in front of me is really a good kid, a little kid. And I thought, oh, shit. Why am I saying he's a good kid? I'm saying he's a good kid because he's a quiet kid. Good kid because he was a quiet kid. That's my conception of good, quiet. And yet, I'm not disturbed by screaming children. They don't bother me. I mean, I don't get nuts, but I love it. You know, I don't care if the kid's blowing off in the restaurant, in the airplane, the bank. I don't care. I'd rather see a parent let the kid blow it off than see him stuff it. There's a book out that, if you want to start really getting into heavy stuff, which is called For Your Own Good by Alice Miller, or a book called Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller. She's a German psychiatrist. One of her books, in essence, says if Hitler had children, we probably wouldn't have had World War II. But unfortunately, he didn't have children. So he couldn't dump the European child-rearing process on them. He just dumped it on Poland instead. But she said, you know, like the whole world focuses on Jesus Christ. And yet, if you want to talk about child-rearing, you should focus on Mary and Joseph. Because Mary and Joseph were the perfect parents. First, they knew they were raising the child of God. Secondly, although he went places they didn't understand and did things that frightened them, they never interfered. They learned from the child. Learned from the child. And yet, I'll share this one. This is in one of the two books. This is out of a child-rearing manual written 200 years ago. 100 years ago, I forget when it was, 100 years ago. I don't remember, 100, 200 years ago, that's not important. A long time ago. It's telling the parent when the child is small, a couple months old, in its bed, if it begins to cry, what you should do is you go in and first make sure the child has no needs. Make sure their pamper is dry, make sure they don't have gas. Once you have established that the child has no needs, then make it very clear to this child, remember they're talking about a baby in a crib, that the crying is not acceptable. And if they don't first, and you can do that by making a loud noise. And if they persist over a period of time, if the loud noise is not enough, you may have to physically strike the child to get the child to understand that crying when they have no need is not acceptable. And if you are successful in this part of your child rearing, as they get older, a simple look will be enough. I have spent most of my adult life reacting to the expressions on the faces of other people who probably weren't even looking at me. Or may have had gas. But I die. I get into change. What have I got to change about me in order to alter that expression on their face? I live now guided by my intuition, which is, some will say, the child. There are many metaphysical teachers and prophets today who will say it's critical that you find the child, because it is through this child that God will speak to you. God is the child.
Whoa.
Huh? Think of that next time you head for the Oreos or the, you know, Marlboros or the, you know, coffee or the whatever. Feelings is a matter of experiencing them. Recovery is a matter of information that you don't have. And I'm, again, it's back to the thing, we beat ourselves up for not having, not doing things, not knowing things that we were never taught. You know, I always get a little heat every now and then about this one. It's like with OA, you know, it's like, in my opinion, let's get to them. I'll get your mind off the feeling stuff. We'll lighten it up, get you really pissed off. There's a lot of things that are coming, information that's being presented to us today based on a lot of scientific study, which is once theory, once speculation, now fact. And yet, we ignore this information, okay? One of the probably the most vital pieces of information coming out of the underground pipeline today is that nutrition and mental health are hand in hand. Okay? The big secret that's being whispered in the back hallways of the scientific laboratories is, you are where you eat. They know it now to be a fact. Okay? Of all the organizations, AA, NA, GA, EHA, whatever the hell the rest of them are, the one seems to me that should have the strongest focus on nutritional consciousness would be you guys. And what else I think about food for the world? I got a handy piece of information for you. A lot of foods, by their nature, set off cravings. Okay? Most processed foods will do that. Because of the chemicals used in the processing, they trigger a physical craving. Also, foods you are allergic to, you will crave. Foods that are really bad for you, you will crave the most. Okay? So, I don't care how many goddamn steps you're working. I don't care what food list you called into your sponsor this morning. If you're sucking up a can of, you know, sloppy joes, right, on a piece of 7-grain bread, your health food lunch, you may want to eat as soon as you're done with your meal. And your immediate instinct will be to beat yourself up. What's wrong with you? You're not working a good program. You still want more food. You still want to eat. I told you you weren't working this program right. You're never going to goddamn make it. Reality might be, it might just be what you ate. Which is, I hate to say that, you know. I mean, I'm not denying compulsive overeating. I went on a sugar tear for 6 months one time. It absolutely astounded me and everyone who knew me. Treated it just like a narcotic. Just, well, I'm hypoglycemic, so it works like a narcotic, too. It's great stuff. Puts you right out. You know, you get one quick high for about 4 seconds and then to sleep, you know. Well, I quit smoking. I didn't know that cigarette tobacco in the United States is cured in sugar. I had no idea. What? Yeah, it's cured in sugar. They use sugar to cure the tobacco. So when I gave up the tobacco, my body had lost a major source of sugar. And it wanted sugar. I'm talking serious sugar. No lightweight bullshit sugar. It wanted sugar. And I treated it like it did. I'd sit home. You know, I was living in Montecito at the time. I'd be sitting home at night. It'd be 10 minutes to 11 at night. I'd be sitting here very comfortable, saying, well, there's no ice cream in the house, but it's okay. It's not important that there's no ice cream in the house. I can have a glass of water and go to bed like the guy next door tonight. I don't have to have ice cream. It's no big fucking deal that there's no ice cream. Those words are lethal to me. The minute I say no big deal, lethal. I better start looking at something because I'm pushing everything in. 5 minutes to 11, I'm out of the house in a dead run, into the car, 100 miles an hour down Santa Ynez Road into Montecito Village, broadside to a stop in front of 31 Flavors, through the door I go as the guy's coming with his keys to lock it up, get my quart of pralines and cream, my jar of butterscotch topping, and my jar of dry roasted cashews, go home and get a bowl. I mean a bowl. I don't mean a chicken shit cereal bowl. I'm talking about a bowl. And make a sundae. Shortly after eating the sundae, I would be unconscious. Which is fine with me, because I was in a relationship that was on the rocks anyway, and I didn't have to deal with her because I was out on the couch. And the sugar. Probably put on 50 pounds more than I have on me now. Got off of sugar by eating apples. That's the snack I allow myself. Red apples. But again, you know, I don't have the problem with red apples. I don't get leave that. If I go home tomorrow night to my place and I get in the apartment and there's no red apples in my apartment, I'm not going to get in the car and go 100 miles an hour to the Apple store. But I will the sugar store, or I will the salt store, or I will the grease store. Love grease. My body loves grease. Don't you dare steam it when you can fry it. I don't eat grease, but my body would love to have it. And if it gets any, if I'm stuck, traveling is a terror sometimes. Traveling is like, usually my only hope is to try and find a Chinese restaurant in a small town, negotiate with the cook, and then I can usually come out okay. Because I can get vegetables and rice and a few things and I'm all right. Sometimes I can't find a Chinese restaurant now. It's, truck stop city, which can be a salad and maybe they don't even know what a baked potato is. French fries. And I'll eat a salad, a big salad, I'll eat French fries. I walk out after French fries. It's like, maybe we should go back and have more French fries. But when I eat French fries, I know I'm eating shit. Okay? I mean, I'm not sitting there deluding myself that I'm having a healthy snack. I know it's garbage, okay? I don't eat processed foods. I haven't eaten processed foods in years. I haven't eaten sugar in years. There's a lot of stuff I don't eat anymore, okay? So I'm just throwing out if what I eat, and it does affect my mental health, okay? I can't remember what the hell I ate. I ate something somewhere not long ago at night in a restaurant. Oh, we went out to a restaurant and I couldn't negotiate well because it was a Mexican restaurant in Santa Fe. And anyway, my dinner was not good. It was like it had cheese in it and it had salt in it and it had a lot of stuff in it that I'm not used to. The problem with this, if you begin to really finally take care of yourself, is that you do get clean. Your body's really affected by stuff, more so the cleaner you get. I went home that night. I went to bed. I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning so filled with anxiety I couldn't go back to sleep. It had nothing to do with the program I work. Nothing. Had nothing to do with my spiritual fitness. It had nothing to do with the prayers I said or didn't say before I went to bed. It had to do with the type of food that I ate. That's it. So, you might want to start thinking about, if you don't already, I'm starting to meet a lot of people in OA around the country who are vegetarians and are really nutritionally conscious. But I also hear from them that they run into a lot of flack when they start trying to discuss the stuff at meetings. It's like a heated thing. So I'm bringing this up so you'll have something to, walk around the trees here and talk about my death.
Killing, what does he know?
I'm convinced, absolutely, totally, thoroughly convinced beyond the shadow of any doubt, that if Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson founded AA, the same 12-step recovery program that you use, if they founded it today, brand new, August whatever the hell this is, 1986, nutrition, exercise, and therapy would be integral parts of the program. Absolutely. They didn't have the information then. They put into this fellowship all the information they had, and Bill Wilson never stopped looking for more. Never stopped looking for more. Whether he was trying niacin, whether he was at the nutritionist when he was dying, he fought smoking his whole career, whether he was taking acid, it doesn't matter. Bill was always... Bill and Dr. Bob, for Christ's sakes, used to sit at Dr. Bob's houses and have seances. to see if the spirits had any ideas to help him out. Okay? And we get careful.
Well, I don't know if that's good for me, you know, exercise.
An example of recovery to me would be this. One example. And then we'll let you go pissed off. I had a friend on the program who was just a drunk. Not a drug addict or anything else, just a drunk, you know. Made his wife's life miserable, made his children's wife miserable, destroyed his business, you know, laid in gutters, peed in his pants, and came to AA 24 years ago and got sober. Put a life back together, basic life, got a new business, new wife, kind of got things together. Went along, sponsored people, had panels and institutions. Started to exercise a little bit because he began to feel a need like maybe he should. About 6 years ago, they said to him, you've got cancer. Clean up your affairs. It's over. Fred said, I ain't going for it. And for the little drop in the pond that he had made into recovery, into physical recovery, he went nuts. He got into running hard, got into bicycling fiercely, started to swim in the ocean every opportunity he had, and took his medication, took his whatever treatment they were giving for the cancer, changed all his eating, got rid of the shit, got to cut any garbage out, and just drove on and said, I ain't going. November last year, 61 years of age, 23 years sober, Fred was on the Big Island in Hawaii. He was there for the Iron Man, cancer in remission. And he swam his 2.5 miles in his ocean, and he bicycled his 112 miles, and he ran his 26 miles in 15 hours and finished. Back to me, he's recovering. I'm so proud of him, man. It just makes me just, you know. Because see, we don't know how. It's the only reason we don't do this stuff is we don't know how. You want to know why you don't know how to take care of yourself? Look at Mom and Dad. I can't get my fucking mother to walk around the block. I buy her running shoes, socks, books. I can't get her to go a block. And I wonder why I never knew how to take care of myself. I never understood the value, because that's what we're really talking about here, is taking care of yourself. Taking care of you, and it's hard, because you don't know how. You're not bad. You're not a bad person. You just don't have the information. You don't know how. That's all. All we're talking about is becoming, what does the book say? Open-mindedness. Man, that closed-mindedness will kill us quicker than anything. I'm only talking about open-mindedness to new information that may change your life. I think it's healthier for people to give up 3 meetings a week and go to the aerobic class 3 nights a week. Or go to a gym 3 nights a week. You know? Get your ass out there and get the body moving. You'll work out a lot of negative energy, man. I mean, I've run a lot of homicides out. A lot of people are alive today because I got out there and pounded the pavement, you know. That's all we're talking about, you know. It's stuff you just don't know how. And you know what the cross is? It's that thing in me that there's something wrong with me and I won't do things that I don't know how because I'm afraid I'll look foolish because I don't want you to find out something's wrong with me instead of just being able to walk out there and say, I don't know how to do this. Would somebody please teach me? Or just going to a school that has a running clinic, say, I don't know how to run. Or going to a sports medicine institute, say, look, I'm a little overweight. You know, I'm X number of years old. What the hell do I do here? You know? And let them tell you. Instead of thinking you've got to work all this out in the closet by yourself with no information. Oh, the mind will tell you, oh, it's okay, we'll figure it out, don't worry. 4 years later, you're still figuring it out. You know, there's a lot of preventative medicine out there today, a lot of sports medicine doctors. You know, you got problems, you go say, hey, I think I'd like to start exercising. What can I do? What can I do? And they'll tell you what you can do. They'll test you. They'll find out how strong your bones are, how good your heart is, how good your lungs are. And they'll tell you what you can do to start. May only be walk around the block. May only be, you know, whatever it is. It is. I tore my knee at Brennan, so I do a lot of bicycling now instead. My kid loves to bicycle. Loves to bicycle. Christ, it's a little unhappy at 7,000 feet. We're going to a real serious period of adjustment right now. I can't breathe up there. Fucking near died the first time out. Jeez. I know they're going to take me to the hospital. Anyhow, I think that's enough information to enlighten your afternoon. Oh, by the way, I spent just a couple of real quick fun ones. I spent some time here not long ago, a couple of months ago, with probably the most spiritual human being I've ever met in my life. Who's silly, by the way. I don't know how much time he spent out running around trying to find people who were, but the most evolved people I have ever met are very silly people. I mean, they're really silly people. They just giggle a lot and laugh a lot, and they just don't take very much very serious. And I was talking with this guy, and he laughed, and he said, enlightenment, enlightenment. He said, oh, God, when are people just going to learn? Enlightenment just means lighten up. And we're talking about, I mentioned old souls to him. He says, old souls? Because we always put a lot of priority on old souls. You know? He says, old souls? Old souls are slow learners. Oh. And the other thing he said, which really rocked my life, made me able to make this change in 2 weeks decision to move from, give up 42 years of my life in California and move to another state and just walk out the door and close it behind me and feel good about it. But he said, there is one purpose to life here as we know it. That purpose is to learn. That is the only thing any of us are here for, is to learn. And if the only reason we are here is to learn, you cannot, under any circumstances, fail. You can't. We have never failed. We have just learned. See you tonight with your animals. God bless you. Better? Is that what they want? Closer? I'm not mechanically inclined. Who said don't touch it? Who's... My mother's here telling me not to touch it. I am Bob Earl, still in a drug addict and alcoholic. I'll tell a little story. I mean, that really, that don't touch it reminds me of a story that John Bradshaw tells about inattrastive, like shame, and how we often have difficulty with relationships and with any sense of with our sexuality and with any and where we get this feeling of dirtiness about sex. And he said that it begins really subtly. You take a little Farquhar, right? Now he comes, it's a name he chose, so I figure I'm telling his story, I might as well use his name. He comes out in the kitchen one day, he's about a year and a half old, and he kind of toddles up to his mother, and he sticks his finger in his eye, and he goes, "I!" And his mother just goes, "Oh, God, wow, that's great, Farquhar," and kisses him up and hugs him and takes him out and loads him in the car and drives him to Grandma's house, and they run him into the kitchen at Grandma's house, and they say, show Grandma, and Farquhar goes, "Aye, that's neat." And that night, Daddy comes home from work and, show Daddy, and Daddy comes in from work, and little Farquhar stands there and goes, "Aye," and oh, Daddy picks him up and kisses him and hugs him. Farquhar feels all right. A couple weeks later, he comes out in the kitchen, he goes, "Ear!" And he gets the same wondrous response from all the parents. And he's really delighted. So a few weeks later, he comes out in the kitchen, he goes, "Nose!"
And they're all excited at this child's capacity to learn. And then there's a big family dinner, and little Farquhar walks into the living room with no clothes on and goes, "Penis!" And they pick him up, run him out of the room, and tell him what a bad boy he is. Now Farquhar's got a little problem. He's just been shamed. He's just been shamed. And if you think that stuff doesn't matter, lots of luck with your recovery. Don and I were talking during dinner about the fact that if you come out of particularly abusive homes, whether the abuse is by being ignored or the abuse is by being beaten, how we continue to create those relationships in our adult life. And we continue to bring into our life people that treat us the same way because it's familiar and it's comfortable. And people with an absence of self-esteem and an absence of identity will always go for the familiar. Always go for the familiar and the comfortable. Never for the new, the different, and the unusual. Because we must have that sense of safety. And the sense of safety comes from the familiar. Forget pain. Forget pain. You know, there's a line. People hate the line, but it's really true, which is that there is no pain in change. None. Absolutely none. There's a small amount in the resistance to change. But once you make the decision, the pain is gone. I mean, when you finally hit that point at home, where out of complete, absolute, total desperation, you just scream at the top of your lungs, "Oh, fuck it! I don't care!" Pain is gone. Oh, that anxiety, that hanging on in the clenched jaw, you know, and tight muscles in the neck and the back, and it's all gone. You just let it go. You just let the outcome be turned over to a power greater than yourself. And the only thing that forced you to do that was your pain from hanging on. Your pain from hanging on. People always say, "Oh, boy, pain. Geez, I don't like pain. And hey, I don't like fear." I love them all. They're great, man. They're tools. They keep you moving. They keep you moving. I don't know about anybody else. I say goodbye to more people and attend more funerals over complacency than pain or fear. You know? They find that one safe little niche. They say the compulsive, obsessive personality, if they find a rut, will furnish it. You know? Just move in, furnish it, and ignore everything else. Hey, this is okay, not bad. I like it here. Two guys who recently moved from California back to India. Young guys came into AA, okay? They had been all over the world prior to AA. They had been, can we can the conversations? You'll throw it out for everybody. They had spent years in India. I mean, they've been vegetarians since children because they were raised in the peace movement, right? They'd been throughout India. They had walked the rivers. They had lived in the caves with the gurus. They had been in the Himalayas. They had lived with the Tibetan monks. They had walked barefoot in the snow in the winter with Edgar Casey's people in Virginia Beach. They had been all over the globe searching, okay? Searching, praying, meditating, eating the right foods, looking, man, driven like nobody I ever met in my life. The only thing that kept them from getting the message was the heroin they were shooting. Okay? I'm not done. A year and a half ago, they wandered into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We handed them the big book, said, "Here, try this." The first two people in the 24 years I've been around these recovery programs who I met who loved the big book, okay, loved it. They just flipped out. They said, "This is the best goddamn stuff I've ever read in my life. Christ, the Essenes were teaching this 2,000 years before Jesus ever walked the face of the earth. This is incredible stuff. This can set us free from our addiction." Okay? So they used it. Pop, pop. No more heroin addiction. Okay? Now, a whole world opens to them based on everything they did before. Whether it was being judged as right or wrong, there being in India shooting heroin, being in the Himalayas shooting heroin, being in Virginia, being, doesn't matter. Now they've got all this that they mask, this knowledge, whether it's nutritional, spiritual, metaphysical, anything, and they start to apply this program to their life, and I watch these two guys go through this goddamn program like skyrockets. Like skyrockets. In six and a half months, they'd worked all 12 steps, better than anybody else I ever seen working, right? And then, you know what? They were appalled, appalled by the nutritional habits of the people in AA. Appalled. I watched one of them walk in a clubhouse in North Hollywood, and there was one of our staunch 30-year sober members sitting in his chair with his cup of coffee, unable to breathe on his 60th cigarette of the morning, with a stack of cookies in front of him, and his kid looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" And the guy says, "What do you mean?" The kid says, "What the fuck are you doing? God has given you another chance at life, another shot, and you sit here taking your life bite by bite, sip by sip, and puff by puff. How can you do that?" You know what the answer was for this old-time AA-er? "When you're sober as long as I am, you'll understand." Okay? I hope I never understand. So, I don't think, and this is my opinion, and I'm willing to listen to all yours, raising anybody's consciousness about anything, even if they use it incorrectly, is bad. Because if they're going to take nutritional information and beat themselves to death with it, they're going to fuck themselves over on the big book, you know. I mean, you can send yourself out. Yeah. So our problem is lack of absence of information and tools and you know, God will heal me. Where the hell do you think all these tools come from? I mean, you think therapy is like the devil? And your local aerobics class is sponsored by Satan? And nutritional information is being presented by the Communist Party? I mean, where the hell do you think all this stuff is coming from? Either there is God or there isn't God. Either he's all-powerful, all-present, or all-loving, or he doesn't exist. And if he's all-powerful, all-present, and all-loving, then these are tools that he's giving me to get me back to where I should be, which is at his side. But I can't be back at his side when I'm stuffing my body with toxins. Okay? Now, let's talk about recovery for a minute. There's a place in New York, in the Catskill Mountains in New York, called Eastridge. Somebody knows of Eastridge? Or just the Catskill? All right. Eastridge is run by a gentleman by the name of Tom Powers. Tom Powers is one of the first 100 members of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Probably one of the last two or three alive. Tom, unfortunately, sort of dropped out of AA as we know it. Not that he stayed away from the principles for one second. He's not ready to die yet. He's about 73 years old. His youngest child is 2. He's a recognized yogi, and he's recently cured himself of cancer a few years ago. He took a walk when he said to his friends after about 20 years, he said, "You know what? You're watering this thing down, guys. This is and always has been and always will be intended for one purpose only. A spiritual awakening. That's the goal. That's what we're after here. Screw the tools. That's the goal, spiritual awakening." So he founded a little place in the mountains in Catskill. And initially to get it going, he would go into New York to the Bowery and he'd just get guys that didn't care anymore, you know. They would have fucking gone to Lebanon, you know. "Oh yeah, sure, what the hell, let's go, you know. They got wine there, I'll go, you know." And he took them out and he began to get the community going, okay. Now you can go there for any length of period you want. 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, the rest of your life now. It's a community. It's a big community, okay. Unfortunately, however, when you walk through the doors as a newcomer, they are not quite, and they take compulsive overeaters as well as drug addicts and alcoholics and any other kind of problem you might manifest, they aren't quite as tolerant as we are. No, you can be a compulsive overeater. It's just fine. You may not like it when you get there, but you can be one when you arrive. That is the end of it as far as the physical practicing of the disease will be, because you'll have to kill somebody to get more food, okay? The minute you walk through the door, you will give up drugs, you'll give up alcohol, you'll give up caffeine, you'll give up cigarette, you'll give up processed foods, you'll give up sugar, you'll give up salt. You'll be fed three nutritionally well-balanced meals a day. You'll learn how to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. You'll learn to pray and meditate. You'll learn to go to the chapel and sing songs. You'll learn to exercise. Then you get your breakfast. And you'll learn to work hard. You'll be helped with the program by people who may or may not like you while they're helping you through this process of getting in touch with who you really are. And that's generally the program. There is no slack. If you say to Tom, why, Tom, would you be so extreme? And Tom will say, because they're goddamn keeping us asleep. And they're trying to keep us asleep with what they feed you. Okay? It is the cigarettes, the caffeine, the salt, the processed food, the sugar that keep you in a stupor. You know, I mean, you guys use it like we use our drugs. It keeps you in a stupor. If it didn't fucking work, you wouldn't use it. So to not change that consciousness about the food, it seems to me, is a great disservice to everybody. Because, see, it's like cigarette smoking. No more can you be cute about it. The facts are in. It's over, guys. It's it. It will kill you. And for the ladies, you know, for the ladies, I was so moved. I got a phone call from a friend of mine about 6 months ago in Texas. He and his wife were both in the program and both adult children, both ACAers. And they found out she was pregnant. And they hadn't expected it and they hadn't planned it. Both quit smoking immediately. Both. Because there was going to be a new child. And they would not do that to the child. That consciousness touches me. You know, it really touches me. And girls, you know, you may think it's okay anymore and it ain't okay anymore. 15 years ago, lung cancer in women was so insignificant there wasn't a large enough percentage to record it in the statistics. 15 years ago. 1986, it has surpassed breast cancer as the number one killer of women. See? And we act like that stuff doesn't matter, you know? Like it's not important. And it is important. You know? It's just that I don't know how to take care of me and I need help. Now that to me is what we should all be about. Like I love the bickering between the programs. I think that's fucking hysterical. Particularly between NA and AA. I mean, that one will put you under, right? I can't talk at our meeting. You go to more AA meetings than NA meetings, so we don't want you. I mean, Jesus, if there was ever a group of people in the whole world that should be working together, it is the gamblers, the eaters, the drug addicts, the alcoholics, and we should all be striving, you know. Your energy level of CA is a little hard to take, but it's okay. It's like walking into a goddamn buzzsaw going into a CA meeting. Cocaine Anonymous. Man, I've been to some of those meetings. I'll tell you, take a hard hat. Anyhow, back to the subject. Is there more on the subject of questions, or let's have fun? Hardest thing about nutrition is there's different opinions. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know that there's any one that's right. I think it's a matter of people finding out what's right for themselves. You know, because I've been to two extreme schools of nutrition, which is the live food people over here, who are rabid people in their own way. And less rabid because they're a little too young. Over here we have the macrobiotic people, okay? And each will swear to God that their way is right. And both groups of people have countless statistics that they can cite of the curing of cancer with their eating plans alone, both groups. And I have found, for me, it's in the middle. Right down the middle. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Julian.
Oh, yeah, right. Good point. Yeah, it's a balance. Good point. Yeah, it's a balance of, it's sobriety. The very definition of sobriety is moderation. Terrible word for those of us who want instant gratification, but it is moderation. And And my yeah, if it isn't moderate for me, I break. See, I get rigid. Like, I've joined before the last 3 years or 4 years, I probably joined 25 gyms, you know. Go 3 months and miss a day. One day. That was it. Then I never go back, and I never could go back because having missed the day, I missed the week, and I'm unable to go back. So yeah, we're talking about balance. And everything I'm saying, you know, I didn't just do all this in a week. So if you're sitting out there feeling this sudden pressure, like, oh, how did I do all this by Monday? You know? I wonder if there's a gym down here at the junction at the local store. What I'm really talking about, as opposed to the physical action itself, is I'm trying to shake your consciousness. I'm trying to shake you out of complacency that what you're doing is okay when it really may not be. And in the long haul, instead of working for your recovery, you may be working against it. Because there was a couple of studies in Washington. You guys will love this one, right? Because AA always goes, ah, fucking compulsive overeaters, you know, shit. What do they know about pain, right? There was a study done in Washington, successfully by a couple of doctors, saying that the number one reason for people leaving the program after continuous sobriety, after periods of continuous sobriety, now they're talking about over a year, a couple of years or more, leaving the program, the number one reason, the number one cause was nutrition. Nutrition. That, in AA, that if you eat rotten food, it will keep you in a state of depression. And if you continue to stay in a state of depression for a long enough period of time, you will seek the solution that you know works. And you'll go back. Yes? Okay, I hear you, but it is to me, it's a trade-off. It's a little bit of learning to love myself through the steps. Then it's a little affirmation of my love for myself through my actions. Okay? So sometimes I may make the action first, and a light bulb will go on saying, wow, do you know what? You've successfully ridden your bicycle 5 days a week for a month. Isn't that great? And I will look at myself in the mirror with renewed respect. And this has not come about as a result of any internal work I've done on a program. It's come about as a result of physical activity. Conversely, I can do internal work on me. And so I got into the therapy and a lot of the ACA issues. I couldn't take care of myself. Could not take care of myself. And once I began to touch on those, I began to be able to do it. So it's a constant trade-off back and forth. But again, the bottom line for me comes back to, it is all spiritual. It is all God. All tools provided by God. I mean, I don't figure that all this information is coming to us by some mistake. You know, I mean, if somebody says, gee, the programs are doing terrific, I'd say, not really. I think we're kind of floundering around, you know. AA should be 10 million strong. You know, where the hell are they? It's not saying there's anything wrong with the program. It's beautiful, as designed. But it must be some kind of unity. Yeah, please. I don't mean to say yeah. Yes, please, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it's a great discussion. I think everybody sharing is great, because her experience is not necessarily somebody else's experience. One of my dearest friends in L.A. is an exercise bulimic. Okay, she taught 6 aerobic classes a day, ate nothing but health foods. Okay, never vomited in her life, but she just worked herself into a state of absolute exhaustion. Okay, well, yes, we could cite Jane. doesn't happen to be her, but for her, the minute she decided to, you know, she began to concentrate more on this quote program and just said, you know, it didn't matter what she ate, she got violently ill. And so she had to return immediately to the nutritional consciousness that she had built up while still working the program. I don't think it matters. I know one thing will kill you quicker than anything else based on my experience, which is what makes this whole discussion a lot of fun, at least for me. Rigidity. Rigidity. My way, your way. Or contempt prior to investigation. You know, because I mean, I travel all over, man, and I can't always get the foods I eat, and I have to negotiate with Chinese cooks in the kitchen in Kingman, Arizona, right, who fucking don't know, you know, to try and get the right food. And bottom line is, I'm going to eat, you know, I'm going to eat something somewhere. Worst comes to worst, you know, I'll be at the truck stop on Highway 40 having French fries and a head of lettuce, you know. And I will not find it necessary to go suck on the exhaust pipe of the car because I've eaten French fries.
And it had what?
Okay, to respond. May I respond? So what? I mean, so you run yourself into fucking oblivion. You understand? I mean, at least you're still around to work the steps. No. In other words, I mean, if somebody runs themselves for 15 years into oblivion, not working the steps, ignoring the steps, just running, sober but running, okay? And one day they say, God, I'm in a lot of pain. You know, God, it's over 15 years, I'm out here running 20 miles, and you know what? I want a Budweiser. Maybe at that point, they now come back and decide, perhaps they should work the steps again, having not worked them for 15 years. The consciousness of that person coming back after 15 years of running, compulsively or not, to work the steps, is up here, as opposed to if he'd been living in a sewer, still staying sober, you know, down here. So, yeah, the odds on us abusing this stuff are good. Really good, okay? But my experience has been, and the experience of the people that I'm close to, okay, is that it's not a big deal to abuse healthy things in the long run, okay? Now, okay, no, I mean, you can make an issue out of it if you want, but the bottom line is you're going to abuse something. I mean, I don't know anybody that comes in here who doesn't. I remember OA when I used to go to OA birthday parties and everybody's drinking wine and smoking pot celebrating abstinence. Yeah? Don remembers. I mean, that was it, you know. But it was okay because they weren't eating. Who the fuck was, you know? You know, everything was okay, right? Probably some of them today are on the World Service Board running your organization. I don't know. You know what I mean? But yeah, we're very apt to do a lot of that stuff. But again, you know, our problem is lightening up with all of it. You know, it's like, okay, so somebody runs their brains out. Yeah. All right. Let's have some fun. As far as nutrition being an outside issue, I don't think it's an outside issue to any of the recovery programs. Okay? I mean, if we're dealing with the disease of the mind and the body and spirit, then we should be treating the mind, the body, and the spirit. And it was never an outside issue to Bill. You know, I mean, if we're going to use the founders as a choice. So, I mean, I guess it's up to whoever wants. I love to do this stuff because it gets everybody going. You know? And it makes you evaluate where you're at, what's important, what you're doing, and what's going on. You know? It really gets you going. I if you think I like it, oh. I'm done. If it's real important, otherwise we're done with the sharing. Right on. That's a good point of clarification. As is, you know, whereas a lot of pamphlets that AA won't publish. And a lot of pamphlets that Al-Anon won't let ACA read. I had to. If you're Al-Anon and you're here, God, I'm sorry. Not really, but what the hell. If all this conversation was going on and I was sitting out there and I was a little insecure with my place or my eating plan or my program or my steps or my exercise or my absence of any of those things or whatever, the number one thing I would be feeling right now would be fear. I would be afraid. And you know why I would be afraid? I would be afraid because way down deep inside of me, there's a little spark of life that wants to live more than anything else in the world. And that little spark of life would have attached itself to anything it heard that it found valuable to its recovery. And it would have gone, I want to be able to do that. And another part of me, powerfully conditioned over the years, would say, you probably can't. So then I would say to those who are talking about it, fuck you. Well, I wouldn't say it out loud, I'd say it internally. Hell, I ain't gonna do none of that shit. Okay? You can take your nutrition and your goddamn exercise and all the rest of that horse ass stuff. stick it in your ear, because I am just going to work the steps. And that will be the sum total of my recovery. Out of fear. Not to negate the steps. But I know a lot of people who worked a lot of steps who are dead. You know. Okay? Deader than a doornail. Deader than a doornail. Afraid. This spark of life is incredible. Incredible. And it's in all of us. It's in everybody. You know? It's just... It's like, first of all, you're sitting here in this retreat because of this little spark. Now, you may not want to listen to it, and you may want to ignore it, and you may want to pour water on it, and you may want to bludgeon it to death, and the only reason you want to do those things is because that little spark wants to take you places that your compulsion and obsession don't want to go. So you have to say, we'll stay here. But people who are not all necessarily bound up in all those compulsions and obsessions can follow that little spark, and when they get moving down the path, they don't let anything get in their goddamn way. Anything. I'll give you an example. In 1980, there was a girl from Ohio, I think she was from Akron or Columbus, I don't remember which. Beautiful girl. God, she was pretty. Was like 20 years old, 21 years old, training to go run the Honolulu Marathon. And she went from Ohio to Houston, Texas, to train in the humidity. Serious runner. She wanted to do really well. She wanted to be one of the top women finishers in this marathon. And while she's running in the park in Houston, Texas, training to go to Honolulu to run the marathon, she was shot from ambush by a sniper. No particular reason. Just he picked her out. The bullet severed her spine. She was paralyzed from the waist down. 3 years later, when I was in Honolulu to run the Honolulu Marathon, I met her. And it was from my little spark of life, it was love at first sight. Because she had come to Honolulu in 1983, this is after being shot in 1980, to participate in the wheelchair marathon, which she won for the women. Okay? Now, we can sit and talk all the intellectual goddamn bullshit arguments we want around here, but the reality of it is, there is a spark, and you have it, or you wouldn't be here, and you're scared fucking to death of it, or you wouldn't panic when people put out stuff that the spark desperately wants. And you panicked because you're conditioned to believe you can't do it. That's all. It's that simple. It's not a big, complicated thing. Everybody sitting in here has that little spark going, oh, yeah. Let's exercise a little bit. Let's do a little better. Let's do a little. This is good stuff. Let's go do it. And my whole psychic is designed, thanks to my parents, to just go, shut the fuck up. I got all I can do to get out of the house in the morning. Don't be bothering me with this life shit. You know? Fortunately, I don't have to concentrate to breathe or I'd be dead. I would be dead. Because I couldn't do it. So again, for me, the thing comes back to self-esteem. The story Don's talking about. The story about spiritual awareness. I heard it by mistake. Somebody said to me, how would you like to come to this, a girl I was dating, her mother was in real estate in Orange County, like the head real estate woman in Orange County. And she said, how would you like to come to this lecture with me Thursday night? And the guy's real good. And I said, this guy down here, the child, said, yeah, before I had a chance to think about it. I like to think about things, which immediately, of course, kills any spontaneity. Well, let's think about this. So I go to this lecture, wondering why I went. A, I don't sell real estate. B, I don't buy real estate. I don't want anything to do with real estate. I have no goddamn idea why I'm in this lecture. And the guy, ironically enough, was talking about spiritual awareness, spiritual reality. And he was talking about spiritual consciousness. And that there are levels of spiritual consciousness. And the lowest level of spiritual consciousness is where things are more important than people. Think back. The example this guy cited, his name was Henry or Hank. Hank, I think it was not long before this talk, his daughter, who was like 8 or 9 years old, was carrying this pitcher of milk, and their sister-in-law had sent them an incredibly expensive porcelain pitcher from Europe. And the daughter was carrying it from the refrigerator, filled with milk, back to the table, okay, in her stocking feet. Now, I was already impressed that the pitcher was in use, you know, not locked up in a glass case. I'm already moved by the story, and you wouldn't have to go any further. The little girl slipped on the wax floor, fell, dropped the pitcher, and it shattered in hundreds of pieces all over the kitchen. He said, right now, at this time, in this point, in this child's life, it is critical as to her relation to things, what we do. He said, and both, my wife and I, jumped up immediately, ran to the kitchen, picked her up, and said, are you hurt? The concern was for the child. Okay? He said, now, most homes would be screaming at her for what a fucking idiot she was for having slipped on the floor and dropped the pitcher. He said, once we established she was okay, and she felt okay, and she hadn't been injured, and she'd calmed down from the incident, and we had cleaned up the porcelain, and we cleaned up the milk, we sat her down and talked to her about how impractical it is to carry heavy objects on newly waxed floors in stocking feet. He said, now the next low level of spirituality is where animals are more important than people. And he said he got in touch with this one when he went out to a Santa Anita, the racetrack, with a friend of his to pick up a horse that another friend of the two of theirs had claimed in a claiming race, some $50,000-$60,000 horse. So they get out there, they get the horse loaded in the horse trailer, and they get on the freeway, headed back into Los Angeles on the freeway, and he said he looked over at his friend, and his friend is driving like 40 miles an hour on the freeway, clenching the wheel so tight his knuckles are white, and every time the horse trailer goes kerthunk, the guy just grabs the wheel. And Hank said to him, what the hell's going on? And the guy said, man, I've never had anything that valuable in my car before. And Hank sat there for a minute and said, I'm sitting next to you. I'm a human being. That's a goddamn horse. You know, he said, you mean if we didn't have a horse on the back of the car, we'd be doing 90 miles an hour weaving in and out of traffic? Yeah. The next low level of spiritual awareness is where, called false humanitarianism. False humanitarianism is where you help someone else and make sure that about 150 people know that you did it. There was another level in there, and I don't remember what it was. And he said, finally you get to the level, the top level of spiritual awareness, and he said it is very simply this. It is that we are God's finest creation. We are His children, created in His likeness, and His finest creation. And we are the most important thing on the face of the earth to each other. Nothing is more important. And I heard that lecture and I thought, of all the people in the world that should really apply to, it's us. Those of us in the recovery program. We're it, really. You know, sure you can work the program in Nome, Alaska by yourself with a book, but the fellowship is what it's about. Okay. When I try and do new things in recovery, now I want to start to get to some of the stuff, maybe, just to deal with some of the fears, okay? When I try and venture out into these new areas in recovery, whether it be a new way of meditation, a new church, new form of nutrition, a new kind of exercise, a new anything, I have found it is absolutely critical for me to surround myself with supportive people. Okay? It is not a contest here for me to see how much I can take. I used to think it was a contest to see how long I could hang in there with my sponsor while we didn't agree. You know? How long can the two of us hold out here? How long can we tough this situation out, okay? I never understood that it was okay for me to be surrounded by people who support me in what I'm trying to do, okay? My very best friend of 20-some years in this program, and man, we have worked to have this friendship. We have fought, we have screamed and yelled, we have almost had fist fights, we have not talked for each other for a year at a time. I mean, we have been through horrendous bullshit to work out a friendship, a male friendship, you know? Now, it is so close that we can't talk on the phone to each other without crying. And one of the reasons we can't talk to each other on the phone without crying is because we so value the male friendship that we never had, ever able to have with our fathers or with brothers or with any other living human being. And we have worked on this, but it is a friendship of unquestioning support. Okay? Unquestioning support. He called me a while back, told me he's getting married. Spur of the moment, few weeks, you know, bang. And he's becoming like out of another relationship. Now, being a judgmental person, I can't remember who said that over here, but being a judgmental person myself, my immediate instinctive reactions inside of me, the head trip is, oh, what a mistake this is. You know, he's fucking up this time. This is serious business. I should get in there and caution him. You know what I said to him? I mean, all this is going on in my mind, which is always there, of course, to help anybody. I said to him, when's the wedding? He says, well, it's Saturday, and as it's, you know, Friday, I didn't think you'd be able to get here. But I wanted you to know anyway. And I said, I'll leave now. I'll drive up now. I'll see you tonight. That's it. I got to support him, and I got to love him. You know, I don't have to approve. I just got to support him, and I got to love him. Sometimes we mistakenly think that approval is necessary as part of love. It's not. You know, it's one of the problems being raised by dysfunctional parents. Dysfunctional parents look to children for their approval. And children have no approval to give. They can't get it. It is an absolute no-win situation. A five-year-old child cannot give approval to a parent. Because approval, the capacity to approve, requires information. A massive amount of information to approve or disapprove. Children do not have this information, therefore cannot approve or disapprove. They can't do it. So with my friend, all I can do is be like his little childhood buddy and say, hey, I'll come to the wedding. I'll come to the wedding. And yet, he had asked somebody else to be his best man already because he was so conditioned to our years of battling in this recovery and working on our friendship, he wasn't sure. He wasn't sure I'd come. You know, he wasn't sure that one more time I wouldn't be a jerk and sit in judgment on him. You know, and I didn't. And that was really beautiful. That kind of finished it for us. I mean, that kind of was the final cementing thing of our friendship, which is now glorious. Glorious. But I've been sober almost 24 years. 24 years the end of this month. I have one such friend. So if I'm looking for 60, I'm in trouble. I have a lot of acquaintances. I have a lot of people I care about. But I have one real friend. Because there's a lot of work in friendships. People come up to me today and say, I'd like to be your friend. I say, I don't know how we can do that. You know? I don't know how we can do that. It's going to take us a lot of time to do that. We can't just do that as a result of shaking hands at this meeting. It's going to take a lot of work. See? Because I don't understand relationships. I don't understand how they work. Let's talk about boy-girl relationships. You guys, yeah, we're going to have a sex meeting? What the hell? Let's get a, you know, going. I think they should put all the questions in one box. Instead of saying who they're for. Might as well be answered by both sexes. I had a terrible time with relationships. I didn't know how to have a relationship. The only yardstick I've got is mom and dad. You know, that's it. I don't know who the hell else you got. Man, if you were raised by somebody else, okay. I was raised by that dynamic duo, okay? Their relationship was a mistake from the first I do, all right? And went downhill from there, and I finished it for them. My arrival was the finishing touch to any relationship they might have had, because my father wanted no children, and my mother didn't know what to do with one. Okay? So I begin to grow up and go out into life, and I now have got to relate to women, and I have no idea how you relate to a woman. None. I don't know what to say, what to do, I don't know how to act. So you go by trial and error for a while. So after a few years, what I managed to do is put together a routine. All right? Sort of like a vaudeville act. I had 3 songs and 3 dances. Okay? We'll get to that. She asked what happened if she wanted an encore. I said, we'd get to that. Now, initially, when you meet, it's no big deal because you got the energy. Come together like 2 freight trains in the night. You disappear, you drop out of sight for 4 weeks, your sponsors can't find you, everybody's fucking crazy. Finally, you resurface to no support from anybody. And now you're going to embark on a relationship. And for a couple, 3 weeks more, it might go okay. Hey? Then eventually, all that sparks just kind of sizzle a little bit. And now we're into the real part of a relationship. Okay? Now, a relationship can be 1 minute, 1 week, 1 year. I'm talking about those that people assume will go the distance. Now, after a while, the woman in question in my life would eventually roll over one day and look at me and go, she wants something. I have no idea what the hell she wants. So I'll do song number 1. So I'll get her up out of bed, walk her into the living room, I'll tell her how all my life I've waited for somebody as special, as wonderful, as magical, as magnificent, as incredible as she is, and I have had a single song that moves me to tears, and I've waited for someone to share it with. And I will get this photograph album out, and I will put the album on, and I will put the song on, and it will move me to tears. I will not, however, mention the other 37 women I have played the song for. Okay? Somehow I think that might take away from the moment. Now we go on in peace for another day, 2 days, week, month, however long we go on, and there they are again, wanting something. I don't know what she wants. So, get her up, put her in the car, drive her down to the beach, hike across a mile path, down the face of a sheer cliff, to the magical spot by the seashore. The place where I used to shoot drugs, and then in recovery, I come for prayer and meditation. It is secret, secluded, isolated. You have to be a mountain goat to find it, to know where it is. I have waited all my life to share it with somebody else. Ignore the footprints of the 37 other people in the sand. I'm not a bad guy. I don't know anything else. Because my experience has been, if you're not in touch with your feelings, you got nothing to give in a relationship except automaton behavior, except singing and dancing. Well, eventually, I run out of songs and dances. Okay? When I started to make money, I had one more dance. I could give them the credit card. You know, I'd save that to last. Okay? Eventually, even the best shoppers burn out. Took longer for some than others. And now, there they are again. Like a hungry bird. And they want something else. And I go, I don't have anything else. I don't have anything else. So now you're calling to attention the secret. You're putting a spotlight on the secret. Something's wrong with me. I'm not, and I hate you. I hate you. And this relationship is over. Now, I can't say that,
And I'm not going to tell you that, because to do that would require some, you know, capacity to communicate. My parents spoke 300 words in 14 years. I don't know about communication, okay, of any kind. So now I may even take you and move you into a new house at this point. But it will be a house you pick out, because I'm the one who knows you're going to be living there alone. So I want you to like it. Now, to end the relationship, I will use my father's weapon, silence. I will ignore you either by becoming a couch lizard in front of the television set with my nose in a book, or just sitting staring at the wall. I will ignore you until you have one of two choices: leave me or kill yourself. Okay? And then the relationship is over. And then we go and start again.